Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, it has been quite a year. This year is going to be different. Those guys who want to hang back and hang on and try to play both sides of the fence, I'm not going to deal with them. I'm not going to deal with guys that's going to play both sides of the fence. And that's what black people do. They try to play both sides. They want these people to like him. They trying to win a popularity contest. It don't work. And it don't work for me. I really want to thank everybody for all the listeners that we have. Even for our Soundboard of the Year Award, we had more than 10,000 people to vote. Over 10,500 people voted during that period of time. And that's a lot of people. The Soundboard of the Year, I think it hit a nerve and really propelled this thing to a whole different level. Normally, I don't really care about what people think in Benton Harbor, because normally they still got that slave mentality, a majority of them. But I want to thank everybody for all the cards and all the letters that you sent. I was shocked. I was overwhelmed with them, because it gave a whole new light on what is really going on, and I really appreciate that. And I'm just here to thank you today and really praise you, really lift you up, and we're gonna fight different this year. We're gonna do things different this year. We're going to be more coordinated, you know, and we're not gonna deal with the ones that want, like I said earlier, want to play both sides of the fence. That's what they do, you know. They want these people to like them. They want these people to like them. People are not going to like you anyway. You know, I found out today about this one guy who I thought that was a friend. And maybe he had some kind of animosity years ago or whatever, but I don't really care. Like I tell them all the time, I don't care. You know, I don't care about nothing. You can say what you can do, because, hey, it doesn't mean nothing to me. But I did get a letter from one of my friends, truly a remarkable man, one who I love dearly, one who actually been with me for a long time, understanding. And he wrote this letter. It almost brought me to tears, because, you know, most of the time, you know, people don't give you your kudos while you're still living. You know, after you're dead and gone, they mean, oh, he was such a great person. He was all this and all that in a bag of chips, you know, but never when you're alive. But my good friend, Phil, he wrote this letter, and it reads, I'm going to read it to you. It says, "Dear Reverend," that's what it says, "I am writing to wish you and Dorothy a joyous holiday season and a very happy new year. I also want to tell you how proud and happy I am that you are my friend." And you're my friend, I'm your friend, we'll be friends forever. "And when I think back to all the events I have been to, because you are in my life, I feel a great sense of fulfillment. If it weren't for you, I would have very little sense of what it's like to take part in a protest. I would also have less of an idea of how corrupt our government is. Some of the events have been painful, tiring, and even boring, but I wouldn't trade any of it because it all contributes to my awareness. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have written the book, which is one of my proudest accomplishments. Thank you for pushing me to do it, and as well as being the inspiration for it. It has given me a lot of confidence and a sense of doing something meaningful and important in my life. I also enjoy doing the radio show with you and being associated with people like you, Dr. Tams. That marks that, you know, that man has a wealth of information that is little well known, but very meaningful. I look forward to being on the show where you want me, whenever you want me to. I also wanted to thank you again for the piano. It is a wonderful, solid instrument that I am sure will give me memories of use of practice for many years. Almost every day, I am coming along at a decent pace. My teacher say I am the most motivated adult teacher she has, and I have come the first in that group. Some of the high school, some of the high schoolers make me look like I'm in kindergarten, but I'm playing the piano has added a lot of new addition and dimension to my life. I look forward to learning more and to someday in the near future compose a musical about you. Yeah, you want to do a musical about me. I want to close with a few thoughts about Dorothy. She is a solid, strong force in your life. And I know you wouldn't be nearly as effective in your fight without her. She is a hero herself and a wonderful component, a compliment to your writing time, courageous energy. In short, I love you both very much, and I am grateful you are both in my life. May this next year bring you much fulfillment and accomplishment, and maybe some of the rewards so that you deserve. God bless you, and Dorothy, love you, feel. Christy said, hello. That's a great, great letter. It really was a tremendous letter written by a tremendous guy. And I always think about things that we can do. You know, most times I don't expect people to write me or call me or do anything I don't expect that because I don't see. The thing is, you can't expect people to do something that they have no history of doing, you see. So I don't expect people to do things. You know, I don't necessarily say thank you. They, you know, for all the work we've done, for saving their children and their children's children, I don't expect them to come to me and say thank you, Reverend. You know, you went beyond the call to do it. I don't expect that. You know, what I expect from them is exactly nothing. You do it because it's the right thing to do. When you're doing what's right, you don't worry about what other people say and what other people are doing because other people will do anything. Believe me, they will do anything. And I'm so proud just to be part of something because I believe that the future belongs to us, but it will not be given to us unless we're able to take it. It's not going to happen. You know, they always say that we run fast, but we don't run long. But before I bring in my first guest, I want to talk about some of the things that's happening inside the city of Benton Harbor. They was given $9.8 million. According to them, they still have about $4 million. But it was given to the community, to serve the community during the COVID, $9.8 million. And this is what they claim they did, but they did not do it. They're lying. They did not do it. They put that money in their own pocket. $1.56 million. Supposed to have been given to residents, really. Didn't happen. $1.56 million. Never happened. Rental assistance, $500,000. Never happened. Utility assistance, $500,000. Never happened. Internet access, $50,000. I don't know nothing about that, so I really can't comment on that. Neighborhood improvement, $1.3 million. I don't know what they improved. I don't know who got the money. We don't know none of that stuff. Vacant lot cleanup, $150,000. That's not true. That's a lie. Park safety, $150,000. Park safety, $350,000. Block club, $40,000. We don't even have a block club. Nobody have a block club here in the city of Bethlehem. They're lying. Youth employment, I can't comment on that because I think they did have some youth employment, but I don't think it was $200,000 for a six-week period. I don't see that. Camera system, which they didn't need, but they according to them, they spent $250,000 on that. Fire hydrants, $75,000. I don't know. I can't even comment on that. It's a possibility. I don't know. Water and sewer, $1,200,000. That's a lie. All the money was already here for that. No use of spending any money on the water and sewer. It was taken care of by our work, the Bethlehem Community Water Council. It was taken care of by them. Nonprofit and small business received $112,882. We want to know what small business you help, who you help. We need to know that. Churches, internet, $30,000. Well, we need to know it. Community garden, which is my good friend Emma Kennard, $12,882. That didn't happen. That's a lie. Now, here's the killer part. For this PVP money, the city of Bethlehem claimed they paid income tax $250,000 on it. You don't have to pay $250,000. That's a grant. That money was given to you as a grant. So who they crapping? This is what happened when there's no check and balance system. This is what happened when there's no check and balance system. And this is where we at today. This is where we are at today. We are in a fight for our life. We must stand up to the evil and the wickedness that is surrounding us. And it's something we can do. And here's what I'm going to close before I bring in my good friend, because he got to be leaving me at 1:30. McDonald Monday, which is today, which is any fast food, we are not spending no money at McDonald's, not a dime. We are not spending any money at McDonald's. Tuesday, lottery. We're not spending any money on lottery. We're not doing that. No lottery. Wednesday, Walmart. We're not spending no money. No money. No money at Walmart. Four, on Thursday, we're not buying any gas on Thursday from anywhere. No gas. And on Friday, we're not spending no money at any of these foreign stores, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, the Indians, the Arabs. We're not spending no money at that store. No nails being done, no toes being done, no weed being bought, none of that stuff. We're not spending no money during this period of time. Nothing. We're not spending not a single dime. And that's the way it's going to be. So we know what we're going to do. Monday, no McDonald's, no fast food. Tuesday, no lottery. Wednesday, no Walmart. Thursday, no gas. Friday, none of these stores. No toenails, no fingernails, no weed, no nothing. And on that note, I'm going to bring in my good friend, the one and only, Philip. Philip, back. My man.
Hey.
My guy, Philip Bass. Talk to me, Philip.
Hi, Reverend. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, my brother.
It's good to good to be here on your show. I always, it's very likely when I hear you on your show that I'm going to become angry because just the things that you mentioned, you know, the corruption that's going on in your town and all of these, this $10 million or whatever they got that you can't see any sign of it. And, you know, that's hard to hear things like that, you know.
Yeah.
We want to believe in our politicians, and it's really sad. Reverend, anybody that's read the book Soldier of Truth knows that I love you and how much I admire you. And you've stood up to the powers that be, and that's no secret. You know, if they just want to know more about how I feel, they can read that, Soldier of Truth. It's, you know, available on Amazon. I thought today, you know, the newest thing I've been doing is, I think I mentioned it to you the other day, reading a book about a man named Paul Robeson,
mm-hmm.
who I'd never heard of before. And I'm only about halfway through the book, but he sounded like a Superman. I mean, he was, he played professional football, excellent basketball player. I think he played, he had a record number of you know, varsity letters. And,
mm-hmm.
and on top of that, he trained to be a lawyer. And
yeah.
He walked out of the office after a racist comment by the stenographer. She wouldn't take dictation from a black man, but she said it a little differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I haven't gotten all the way through the book, but I have a feeling that the reason that you never, ever hear his name, I had never heard of this man, even though he was very famous. And here's other accomplishments. He was a singer and a well-known singer around the world, well-known around the world for singing and acting. He played in the Shakespeare play, Othello, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, brought the house down. Just all these accomplishments. And you never hear about this man. Now, I know my grandkids, in fact, the younger one, they've gone over the Harlem Renaissance twice with her now, and she's only in fifth grade.
Yeah.
And never mentioned Paul Robeson, and he was a major figure at that time. And I think the reason that they don't is because he leaned towards communism at the end of his career.
They classify him as a communist.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you know more about him. I'd be interested in hearing what you know about him.
Well, here's something I do know. They named a school after him in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago. And I have read the book and several books about him. And the reason I read him was more for sports more than anything else. During that period of time, I was more into the sport part of what he done. And now I will be into some of the other things that he has accomplished. He was, you know, like I said, he broke, I think during that period of time, he was one of the few guys that, the only black on that football team, if I'm correct. And different things like that. But that's the part that about him that I know of. I know him as an athlete. I know him as a singer. I know him as an actor. I know him as a wonderful human being. I know him as these are the things that I know about him. These are the things that when I think of Paul Robeson, I think about his greatness and how great he is. You know, so that's really more or less what, you know, how I look at him. You know, and I haven't read about him in a long time, but I just know about him. You know,
I
read the book, and then, you know, let your grandchildren read it. You know, I think that would be inspiring to them, too, because, like I said, they very seldom talk about this guy because they consider him to be a communist, you know. And by him being communist back then, that was a bad word, you know. And they made communism one of the worst words that you can ever label someone. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely. Is there anything that else intrigued you about him or what he was doing?
Well, he one thing is his career probably wouldn't have taken off if he didn't go to England, because there was so much prejudice here in the United States. And he found people were a little more accepting in England. And another thing I found out was, even he was at the height of his career, he had people just loved him for his performance in Othello. They loved him in England. He was treated like royalty. And he and his wife, Essie, they stayed in one of the most posh parts of town. So they weren't, here in America, black people were a lot of times, excluded always, and then kind of shoved into the Harlem area, even though that was very vibrant at the time. But what he did over in England, and especially in Wales, I guess the Welsh miners were having a real problem. I can't remember all the details, but, probably strike breaking and all that stuff. And Paul Robeson, he gave benefit concerts for them. And I think he's highly thought of over in Wales. He's a hero over there, even though you don't hear about him here. And the people just loved him. And I haven't read about it yet, but they make references, the author does, that, they ended up supporting him probably when he was getting, the government was probably coming after him. I still have to read about that, but I'm sure that his story is going to remind me of your story. And I guess that's kind of why I'm bringing him up. And the book that I read this all in, it's called No Way But This, In Search of Paul Robeson. It's written by a guy named Jeff Sparrow. And this book only came out in 2017 or 2018, so it's probably still available if somebody wants to
That's a book I haven't read. I'm going to have to read that.
Okay. Well, after I let my grandkids look at it, I'll certainly bring it.
Let me read it.
Sure,
absolutely.
So I'll do that.
So you said it came out in 2017.
That's right. And this edition came out actually in 2018, so it's very, very recent. And I got it for a present, so I'm not sure where it came from. But, you might be able to find it at a dollar store. Probably can get it for pretty reasonable. But, again, I got it for a gift, so I don't know that.
Hey, that's
a blessing. But I thought he was Yeah, I think so, too. And I guess, the other thing I just want to mention, I heard you say you're going to do things differently this year. I kind of wonder what direction things are going to go in this year, maybe for if you want to.
Let me say this. What I'm going to do different this year, I'm going to more or less vet the people that I'm associated with a little bit more, because I discovered that a lot of times a lot of people are with you for different reasons, and most of the time what they can get out of you rather than what they can contribute to the community, and then later on down the line they usually expose themselves for who they really are. You see, and I think I'm not going to care about anything like that. I'm just going to because the year 2022 was a great year for us. We did some incredible stuff that probably would never be repeated. Because one of the reasons I think is that it was done by black people. You see, everything we did, we're black folks. And what we did was got people to do things that never done anything before, not for black people. You see, you think the governor would have went out of their way and did all this stuff? The pressure that we applied on them was huge, And I put together a team of black folks and white folks. I put together a team. And we worked. But
you know, they wasn't. See, I'm willing to choke the chicken. You see what I'm saying? They was, you know, a lot of them, they wasn't willing to choke the chicken. You see. So and at times brought up different things, and just like when they sent the police to my house, they more or less ran for cover. You know, will the police come to my house next? What's next? Because it was designed to intimidate, and if they could find something, they'll create something, and most times, white people know this. They know that if, you know, hey, now he's the leader of this. They're going after him. Will they come after me next? That was the question. And the only thing I didn't like about them was that when that happened, most of them ran for cover. There was a couple that stuck with me. There was a couple that stuck with me fighting and said, well, let's fight back. Let's do this. Let's do that. You know? And they know that's right up my house. Others will say, "Oh no, keep quiet. Don't answer. Their statements. Don't let it go. That's not me. I'm gonna answer the statement. I'm gonna answer and tell them, hey, no, you know, you ready to fight? Bring it on. Because I know that you can create anything. So let's have it out. Let's go chest to chest right now." That was my way of thinking. And I, like I said, I had a couple of people that was willing to do that.
Nice.
Yeah, I had a couple of people that actually still said, "Let's go get him. You know, let's show him who we are." Rather than in a lot of people. Matter of fact, one of my friends, she's been my friend since probably about 2004, and she shot me. She ran for cover, you know, trying to cover her butt. And but the thing is, we didn't do nothing. If you didn't do nothing wrong, why you got to cover?
Yeah.
You know, why you got to run and then they Pinckney the bad guy? We're not going to deal with Pinckney right now. We go. But this is how you get stuff done. I mean, I wasn't doing this for me. I was doing it for the community. I don't even live in the city of Benton Harbor. You know.
That's
now here
funny.
I am trying to get them clean safe water. Do that make any sense at all?
No.
I mean, I don't even live in the city of Benton Harbor. And yet still, I'm here fighting for them with my life and everything else. And they got time to find a reason not to like me, like I suppose. That's why I say I don't care about themselves walking around and talking about they don't like somebody. They don't do it. I don't care, Phil. But look, Phil, I know you got to go at 1:30, but listen, go on and you got a couple of minutes. Go on and you do the talking, because I know I get on a roll. It's hard to stop me.
Yeah. You know, Reverend, you're reminding me. I've heard something. It's kind of an unwritten rule, I think, that a lot of white people have, and maybe a lot of black people have it too. And it's called the be nice rule. You know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And I think that bothers some people about you, because you don't pay attention to that rule. You're going to say the truth, even if it's ugly. And, I think people are – maybe they're getting a little tougher and a little thicker skinned. I know I am, being around you. I've heard people say, oh, he's a provocateur. And, you know, my answer to that was, you know, I think he just tells the truth, you know, a little loudly and very often. And so they oftentimes want to call you a name like that, like you, you're trying to start a fight. And, you know, another thing, I think, you know, for a black person or, you know, anybody else that's kind of an underdog in our society, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, for lack of a better way to put it. And if you don't say anything, you're just going to keep getting more of the crap. And if you say something, then people are going to call you names and give you a hard time. But that's just part of the, you know, it's almost like a birthing process, you know. I mean, for a woman to have a baby, it's painful. And it's rough. But, gosh, what a beautiful thing that comes out of it. So I guess that you know, I just want to, I want to ask God to give you all of his blessings, because you, you're doing the tough work for a whole city and, in a way, the whole country, you know, because
yeah.
I know that there's people all over the country and all over the world that know about your work. You've got a lot of supporters, and hopefully you got, you know, word from some of them for this holiday. And I just hope you know that.
Flooded me.
Yeah.
That's why I had to read your letter today on the air. And you know one thing, and you're right. You know, anytime you're in prison and you can get 25,000 letters or more from people, you know that you know you're doing something right. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I don't care about who like me and who don't like me. I don't care about that stuff. Because these people, if they can, they'll stop you from doing something that's good. So you can't do that.
And that's another thing. You're bringing another point, Reverend, is that there's so many forces out here that if you start doing good, they don't like it. It somehow threatens their even their existence. And, you know, these are people, organizations, I think, that operate in the shadows. And I think that's your greatest contribution to our time, is that you have been shining the light on this ugliness, and they want to call you the ugly names, and you're just shining the light on all this ugly, ugly stuff. And I thank you for it.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Phil. I know you got to go, but I got to bring in Dr. Tan. Maybe you can stay a few minutes and listen to what Dr. Tan has to say, because I know Dr.
I'll listen for a couple minutes.
All right. Well, go for what you know. And during that process, hey, Phil, love you. Love your family. And, I'm looking forward to you coming down here helping me with these filters. I'm looking forward to it. And on that note, let me bring in the one and only Dr. Donald Tanz, one of the greatest revolutionaries there is in the world. Love you, Dr. Tanz. Talk to me.
All right, so I'm going to be talking to first my brother Phil. I appreciate him. And what I want to say is that you're damned if you don't do, you're damned if you should do. I want you to, and damned if you would do. So I'm going to say it again. You're damned if you don't do, damned if you should do, and damned if you would do. And in each of those statements, it tells you of inactivity. And you see, those who do are the ones that make change. Those who do look like Moses. Those who do look like Yeshua Mashiach, a.k.a. in Greek, called Jesus the Christ. Those also who do look like the prophet Muhammad. Those who do look like Buddha. Those who do look like Krishna. So those who do look like Confucius. All of them are provocateurs. All of them are agitators. All of them are those who are the hate gatherers, or those who drink who get doses of haterade thrown at them, because they go against untruth and uplift truth. So anybody who's speaking truth is going to draw attention for those who don't like truth. Any of those who shine light are going to be not liked by those who want to live in darkness, who are comfortable with darkness. And so what you find is that most of America, and even in all the communities, whether they're black, Hispanic, white, Japanese, Chinese, Arab, it does not matter. Whether they're Muslim, Hebrews, Hebrew Israelites, whether they're Akanazis, whether they're Shinto, whether they're Daleks, whether they are doing the Hare Krishna up there, where it does not matter what faith system it is, it's very clear that those who speak truth and shine light represents their faith. But 98% of those people are false practitioners. And why I say that is because they don't do anything. They say what they should do or would do, or somebody else should do it. Why don't somebody do something? Those are people without faith. Those are people who don't practice. Those are hypocrites. Because if we just stay with the Moses religion, Moses was a doer. He called out the wrong First, he didn't have the strength. Then the Lord, the Most High, gave him the strength to speak. Then he spoke against injustice and evil. Now, black people are supposed to be Christians, but most black people are liars, and they're fakes and they're frauds when they come to being Christians. And I would almost push it up to 99% of blacks are fake Christians, because the most active person in history was Yeshua Mashiach, who was from the tribe of Israel, called Jesus the Christ. And any time Jesus saw it wrong, he spoke out on it. Blacks were silent during George Floyd. Whites were silent in America during George Floyd. The international world had to condemn America before they realized that George Floyd was murdered. You have Hispanics who were silent. You had Indians, Pakistanis who were silent, Japanese, Chinese who were silent. None of those individuals who say they're Christians, they're all fakes and frauds, because if Christ was here, he would have called it out. And Christ called out that most of the clergies, your bishops, your pastors, your popes, and all that, they are frauds, because he called them, he said that they were ignorant because they do not know Scripture. He said that they were dumb because they didn't know how to read Scripture. He said that they were lowlifes, in other words, whitewashed tombs. He said that they were low-down, dirty snakes, that they were a brood of vipers. He also said that they were two-faced, that they were hypocrites, because the mandate went out, protect my sheep, protect my lambs, protect my sheep, protect my elderly, protect my children, and protect our young people. That mandate went out, and that means that if you see wrong, you have to not let wrong happen, that you have to shine that light on the wrong, uncover what's wrong. And you're going to see that most Christians in the church are liars because they see wrong and they feel that it's somebody else's responsibility. Christ never did that. So they can't say they're Christians. They have to say they're something else. But now I'm challenging them for 2023, put your faith where your mouth is. By faith without works is dead. So if you're not doing anything, then you are a dead Christian. If you're not doing anything, you're a dead Christian. If you're not fighting injustice or calling out wrong, if you can't say that being poisoned by lead is wrong, then you're not a real Christian, not the follower of the Most High God, not Yeshua Mashiach, not Jesus the Christ. You're not a follower of him. If you see people are doing prejudice and racism, then and you don't say anything wrong, then you're not a follower of the Most High God, because racism is a satanic practice. Racism is a satanic practice that keeps you out of heaven. There are no racists in heaven. There are no racists in heaven. So if those who you know who are practicing racism, that's the same thing as being associated with somebody who's demonic. So we have to call it out to get things right. The other point is that we have to uplift people like you, because you are the John Browns of today. You and Jane Elliott and Tim Weiss, you guys are speaking truth to your community. And that's what we need. And see, our job, Reverend Pinckney, is our people have been so brainwashed and so injured mentally that they see you just by the complexion of your skin as a Messiah. They hear your voice and see that it's from Europe, and they give envy to you and they give respect to you just because of your heritage, because of the religion. And what I did, and I would like for you to do this, sir. I would like for you, and I would like you to do it to black people, and I'd like for you to do it to Hispanic people. I'd like for you to do this to Native Americans. And what I want you to do to all of those different people is have them close their eyes, and then I want you to ask them first to imagine an apple. And when they see the apple, then have them say, I want you to see an orange. And then when they tell you they can see the orange, then I want you to say, I want you to imagine the car that you came in or that you drive. And once they can see that car, then quickly say, Jesus, and say, what did you see? And say, did you see a white dude jump up? Because what you're going to see in the black community, in the Hispanic community, in the Indian community, you're going to see a white Jesus who was born in North Africa, who was born from a tribe of Shem and Ham, that you're going to see Jesus that did not interact with Europeans or meet a European until he met the centurion who asked him to go to his house, not to go to his house, but to heal his servant by just saying the word, because he was a man of authority. The Christ that we know did not meet Europeans until late in his ministry, when it was the centurion, then the Greek lady, the Sophoian lady, and then when he met Pontius Pilate, and then later Herod. That was his European experience. But the people who took him to see those people were your Shemitic and your Hamitic people of the Ham and Shem that did him in. And so what I'm telling you is that Satan has been around a long time, having brother against brother and sister against sister. And you have fake people. And how you know a fake is they'll use the word tolerate. Tolerate means to put up with and not respect. And so that's why we're in 2023, every African-American descendant of enslaved Africans on this phone is still 3/5 human. Every black person on this phone is still considered not a full citizen of the United States by the Supreme Court Dred Scott decision. So for our situation with Reverend Pinckney, according to the 13th Amendment of the Constitution, was hereby deemed a slave because he went to prison. So slavery was not ended with the 13th Amendment. It was only ended if you were not enslaved and enslaved and been in prison. So every free black was not considered a slave, but once they arrested you for vagrancy, not having a job, or being unemployed, then they made you a slave again. And that's how, even though they freed the slaves, they re-enslaved them and with a prison system. That's what slavery is. Slavery today is considered the prison system. Now, what we also have to understand is that slavery ended in America and Britain on paper. America and Britain ended slavery on paper. And in Britain and in Europe, they're trying to bring slavery back. And they're trying to bring the American racism to Britain, well, the mistreatments of the Africans that are over there. In the United States, they never gave us full citizenship. They're still under attack. Do you know that the number one cause of death of blacks in New York is Planned Parenthood? Did you know that the number one cause of death for blacks in the city of New York is Planned Parenthood? Then not outside of the police killings, not, and they still just now, just a few days ago, on December 31st, across the southern states, especially Louisiana and Mississippi, don't you know that the FBI will report the statistics when they find the bodies of how many black men were lynched to bring in the new year? You have people shooting guns up in the air to bring in the new year, but it's tradition that you hang a black, like black people cook black eyed peas, you hang a black to bring in the new year. So that is still going on to bring us from 22 to 23. So we have to expose these things, shed light on these things, and call out the people who've been mentally injured. You have whites who've been tricked and deceived and misled by these ignorant little small group of whites that you have out there. And then you have these injured blacks that try to sabotage and go against blacks and hurt blacks because they want white approval. Every black person that a white person knows, 99% of them are mentally injured with low self-esteem, and that's why they are around them. When you see a black person that only has white friends, that means mentally he's been done in. Anytime you see a black person who may only have white friends has been mentally done in. And European-American brothers and sisters, they don't have that problem because they have been taught self-esteem through the history, and their origins are no mystery. So they can tell you that they come from Ireland, from Scotland, from Wales or England or whatever. But the African is only now finding out where he comes from. So with a loss of identity makes you vulnerable, makes you seeking the approval of others. And what happens is that we've been taught not to be a people, because you have to have land, history, and a culture to be a people. Land, history, and culture to be a people. Land, history, and culture to be a people. And that's what they script from the African, the black man, of that. And he's only trying to reclaim that. But the blacks that you see in politics all ignorant. They don't want to identify with blacks. They don't even want to deal with the black issue. They want to deal with everybody issue, a people of color issue. There is no race called colors. There is no people of color, period. Mm-hmm. You're European, you're African, you're Asian. There's no people of color. But black people are so fearful, so ignorant, so broke down, and so have such low self-esteem that they say, I don't want to just help black people. I want to help everybody. And that's why when you have an immigrant who becomes a president named Obama, he was an immigrant. He was not a descendant of enslaved Africans. He was not a Dosa. Then you have an Indian chick who becomes a vice president who's an immigrant. She's not a descendant of enslaved Africans, that therefore they don't have an alliance or an allegiance to the descendants of enslaved Africans who have been here over 400 years in America. So that's why you're not going to see the change. That's why they can't speak truth. That's why they can't make policies and procedures to and help the situation of the African that's here because of that history. What's going on right now is that for 2024, they want to bring the reparations onto the table. They want to bring the reparations on the table because they for the election. And right now, we didn't get a damn thing from the elections. Black people didn't benefit one iota. They didn't get sugar, honey, ash tea from the election because the ignorant blacks, the broken down blacks were didn't ask for anything. They didn't ask for anything. They didn't ask for nothing. They didn't come with a list of demands like the Spanish did. They didn't come with a list of demands like the Arabs did. They didn't come with a list of demands like the Jewish did. They didn't come with a list of demands as the Germans did or the Afghanis did. Black people did not come with a list of demands because of the black leaders that they are old, broken down, and feeble-minded and scared to death of white people. And therefore, our young people have no respect for them and should not respect them. Our young people should not respect the current elderly unless they're like a Reverend Pickney. They should not be respected unless they're like a Minister Honorable Farrakhan. They should not be respected unless they're like a Shiraz Ali. They should not be respected because they do not look out for their race or their people. They care more about the European race. That's our state of affairs. And we have to start calling out the people who turned on Toussaint Louverture in terms of trying to stop the Haitian Revolution. We have to call out the people who turned on Nat Turner, who stopped the Nat Turner Rebellion. We have to turn on those people who caused the assassination of Martin Luther King. We have to call out those people who caused the assassination of Malcolm X. All of these were black people working for white people. We got to call that out in 2023. No more letting others hurt us. Did you not know, and if you studied the Haitian Revolution, that was the only successful revolution, and that's how apartheid followed the Haitian Revolution and got free. So the South Africans attacking apartheid, they did what Bokman, which is the high priest who set the revolution in motion, and they had Dessalines and Toussaint Louverture. What they did that people don't like is that they got rid of all the house Negroes, all the people who were pro-European, pro-French, particularly pro-French. Did you know you had people who were from Dutch that was not killed, that was allowed to be in Haiti? Did you know that there were people there who were white, who were not from France, who supported the Haitian Revolution, and that they were not killed and that they stayed there and was given citizenship because they were considered Haitian citizens because of their love for Haiti, regardless of the color? So it wasn't a race war as a race war. It was a war against racism. And you had whites killing whites to free Haiti. You had blacks killing whites to free Haiti. And what they did is that the Haitians got rid of all blacks that were politicians, what we would call today, who were pro-white, pro-colonization, pro-enslavement. Those whites, those blacks who could not see any injustice being done by the white French, they were eliminated. They were either captured, killed, or tongue cut out or maimed, so they could not tell people about the revolution. And as a result, they first got rid of the house Negroes. That's why they had a successful revolution. And that's what in South Africa they started doing, was that necklace. And the necklace was that the blacks who were working with the white South African government, they would put a gasoline on a tire and around their neck, and they would put that in titles people and burn that tire around their neck. And that's when they killed the informants for the South African government. That's what shut down their information and also allowed the information to get out to the rest of the world to partially end apartheid. It was only partially ended because they made a negotiation with Nelson Mandela. If he would divorce Winnie Mandela and stay on the Rothschild's estate, basically he was a prisoner on their estate, and they would let family members come to see him on that estate, but he could not interact with Winnie Mandela because she was the freedom fighter while he was in prison. She's the one who actually led the revolution against the apartheid government. It wasn't Nelson Mandela. He was a spokesman and a martyr in the beginning, but he was locked away like 20 miles at sea at prison where nobody could reach him or talk to him, and they didn't really allow a letter system and all like that kind of stuff going on like the American system. So Winnie Mandela was the one who helped bring down South Africa and got her husband out of prison, just like Reverend Pinckney's wife did. That she was one who kept the message going and got the attention of Farrakhan and others and got Reverend Pinckney out of prison, who's unjustly in prison. So it was that situation where we had to call out the ones who were against our people to be able to save our people. And that's just satanic, that training and upbringing that we have. And so unity first starts with the first love of self. If you are white, you must love yourself and love those parts of your history that are true. If you're Japanese or Chinese, you must first love yourself and those parts of your history that's true. If you're Arab, Persian, you must first love yourself and those history. Stop stealing other people's history. Bilal was a black man. And in the description of the Quran, it says Muhammad had black skin, and he was going to Ethiopia for refuge and safety because of his black Ethiopian uncle. We know that Sakonoe Tomoto, your first shogun in samurai Japan, a virgin black skin and woolly hair. And in China, we know that Fu Xi was also a virgin black skin and woolly hair and helping to start pre-dynastic China. And we know the leaders of the Shang dynasty, that they were all African and black. We know that because racism didn't exist. We know that Krishna means the black one. Krishna means the black one. So when you call yourself talking Hindi, you're talking about a black man. So we know that the racism in Germany was something new because we knew that they didn't have a problem with Beethoven. We know that they didn't have a problem in Russia with Pushkin. Remember, the Russians didn't have a language. They were speaking French and other language until Pushkin developed their language and created their works of literature, and they still have them there in the museum and stuff there, and he's still a black man. We know that the early religions of the Messiah, with the Madonna, of the mother and child, all of your classic pictures were black. They're called the black Nino, the black baby. Those things did not change until after the enslavement of the African, and that happened because of a few jacked up white people, a few jacked up, messed up Hispanics, because the Hispanics joined the slave trade. The Arab slave trade had started 500 years earlier than the Hispanics started enslaving blacks. Then the American Indians started enslaving blacks. Then the poor whites started enslaving blacks. So every race on the planet at one time mistreated or enslaved blacks. Every race on the planet at one time mistreated or enslaved blacks. And right now the Global Slavery Index will tell you about the current Arab slave trade that's going on right now. And one of the things that happened once the United States assassinated Omar Gaddafi, because he was trying to create the African International Bank and not use the European Bank, when they assassinated him, Arab dogs came in there and reinstituted slavery in Libya. There was no slavery in Libya when Omar Gaddafi was there. But then the Arab dogs now have a Libyan slave trade where they're selling black men in particular. So we have to call it out, the wrong that you're doing. So when you're saying Assalamu Alaikum, that's saying that you hate them. So when you're saying Assalamu Alaikum, they're saying they hate them because they hate the descendants of Bilal, that they're not Muhammad loved Bilal, but the Arab, the Persian of today, who fake to be Muslim, do not love Bilal, do not love the Prophet, do not love Allah, but they are hypocrites to the faith. And yes, I'm calling them out. And if the Hebrew Israelite says that I'm calling you out, that you can only take one wife if you can only afford one wife. You can't have more than wife if you're a broke beggar. No. The Hebrew tradition said that you would actually take a year off from the military, from work, where you would learn your wife when you were first married. So there's no prophet who was broke and had more than one wife. So you have to have that ability. So don't be trying to be pimping out women. No, you have to get back into a mindset of royalty, and that we have to be separated out, elevated up, so we can be a shining light to people. So my brother said, yeah, we have to start shining the light on what's right.
That's beautiful. I got one question to ask. And who are the black masses? When you talk about the black masses, my idea is that, you know, they're descendants of a slave from Africa and on this continent between the period of 1619 and now. What do you think?
That's not what I think. See, that would be inappropriate dates, but you have to understand that the 1619, 1620 date was specifically to Jamestown when a group of Africans
right.
were headed to England for the holiday and shipwrecked. And then they indebted themselves to the Europeans that they would teach them how to live and survive, and in exchange for them to help them to build a boat to go back home to Africa. That's what you're talking about. What you're also talking about in that 1619 is that, remember, America was still a prison colony. America was still a prison colony. It was founded by and sent over by the King of England to get rid of their undesirable, the lowest life Europeans that they had. It wasn't for religious freedom. And in England, if you wanted to practice your faith, you just go out in the woods. That's what you had to do. You don't travel and put your life on the line or cross no boat to try to come over here so you can pray and have your own religion. You had it already in Europe. No, you came here because they said, if you come here, you survive, you can have X acres of land and to build wealth, and then you would just give a tribute of that wealth and taxes to back to the king. That's why whites came over here, and that's why they funded it. And once they built the settlement here, then whites came here for that prosperity. And then once they, they also then started offering, slaves. And for every slave you take, they would give you X amount of land to work it. So the more slaves you had, the more land you would get. But the presence of the Africans coming over here first with the Spaniards goes back in the 1500s, and when they were selling up a colony and stuff in North Carolina. And then and they also traveled along the Mississippi. You see, that's why you have Memphis and cities like that along the Mississippi, that the European was here, because people forget the enslavement of Africans started in 1492. The enslavement of Africans started in 1492. The enslavement of black people started in 1492. So when Columbus set the ocean blue, that was to set me and you as slaves and made us blue. And that's when the Pope gave the edict that because the black person was not Christian, then they could be enslaved. And you have to also understand that up in that time, there was never slavery. They only brought the word slave out then. It became a new word. Then everybody was servants or indentured servants, and you worked 6 years, and in the seventh year you was set free. Even in Jamestown, that was the law until a guy named Anthony Johnson. And in that court case, that's when they switched it over, that slaves could be or blacks could be indebted for life. But up until that time, it was biblically based that you worked 6 years, and the seventh year you were set free. So it was indentured servitude. It never said call the master. No, that was changed. That word was changed. It was the homeowner or the landowner. So it was servants or indentured servants obey the homeowner or the landowner. Then they changed that to slaves obey your master. So people play with words and gives it a different meaning, a different context. But we are the descendants of enslaved Africans. We are the Dosa, D-O-E-S-A-A, D-O-E-S-S-A-A, D-O-E-S-A-A, D-O-E-S-A-A. Descendants for the D, O, of, E, E, N, S, slave, A, Africans, N, A, America. We are the descendants of enslaved Africans in America. We are non-immigrants. We've been here, and we've been here now as a Folsom people, F-O-L-S-O-N, F-O-L-S-O-N, and we've been here also as the Olmec, O-L-M-E-C, 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 which is 600 to 800 B.C., when we set up what was called Mexico, which we set up the Calicon, we set up the Mayan, where we set up the Aztec. All of those people will tell you in their history, they came to those temples. They came to those pyramids. They didn't build them. The native people in America who are a combination of the Folsom people plus the Inuit from Alaska never had a technological high-level sculpture where they built anything. But they had a spiritual culture that we can respect. But technologically, no, those they haven't done anything. Look through our history and saw and look for what an Indian combination of Africa has built. It has always been the African that had built these structures. And the Indians were on the side of the Europeans against the blacks. They were on the side of the – they worked with the Confederate Army to try to maintain slavery. The five civilized tribes sold out to become white, and they created what was the Red Indian and the Brown Indian, and now they have it as Red Indian, Brown Indian, and Freedman. And just last year, they kicked the Freedman Indians, the Black Indians who have been there since the 1800s. They kicked them out to get government money so that it's red and brown against the black. You got that going on in Oklahoma right now. So the American Indians were the number one slave hunters and slave bounty men for the African. That's why the African could just run off the field and escape to Florida, because Florida was their free land. Louisiana was a free land. So blacks didn't try to go off from Mississippi up into New York and then across over into Canada. They didn't do stupid stuff like that because they were too smart and knew that Florida was closer than New York was. You have people who are in the north, they use that Harriet Tubman to get over to Canada. But the other people further south went down to Florida, which was free, and that was owned by the Spanish and later owned by the French. Remember, Louisiana was owned by the French until Toussaint L'Ouverture, Bukman, Dessalines won the Haitian Revolution, and Napoleon had to sell it. So we were rich, rich history. So we have to have, remember, history, you have to have culture and land. If you don't have land, then you don't have a history. If you don't have land, then you don't have a place to build your culture. So our culture is genetically, epigenetically being expressed, and that's why even words and our words that we use today are still coming out of Africa. So we are the African in America, and now the Ghanaian president, the president of Ghana, that said that the African is screwed up and is trying to be separate from the rest of Africa, that the Africa is screwed up by not recognizing the African over here in America. And they had to learn from America that when they came over here that they were not respected as Ghanaians or Nigerians, but that they were respected as Africans. And so Africa now for 2023 is looking at us all as being Africans. And we have the right to be on both sides of the continent, but we earned and built this country. We earned and built this country. No Arab built this country. No Chinese built this country. No Japanese built this country. The African built this country with 300 years of free labor.
There you go, Doc. listen, we ran out of time, but I guess you gave us enough information. You're a history teacher, man, because, hey, that is really, really beautiful. But listen, we got to go. But look, Sunday, 5 o'clock. Sunday, 5 o'clock. And don't forget about next Monday with Dr. Times herself. We will talk to you soon. God bless you. Have a happy New Year's. Stay focused. And don't get sidetracked by these signboards. Talk to you later, Doc. God bless you. God keep you.